For long-time churchgoers, our gospel lesson today is familiar. So familiar that it tends to go in one ear and out the other. I've already heard that one, we think, and we're tempted to daydream. But this story has the power to transform our lives, but it requires that we really hear Jesus, that we struggle with the difficult things that he is saying. So I invite you to listen carefully this morning. Learn what it is that Jesus says. Listen to determine what it means for your life. To understand this story, we must first understand what has happened. Peter has just proclaimed Jesus to be the Messiah, the one for whom Israel has waited for so long, the one who will save them. Peter, who was so often so wrong, got it wrong again. Oh, at first he got it right. I'm sorry, I'm telling you the end of the story. He got it right because he identified Jesus as the Messiah and Jesus affirmed that. But then what happens? What happens next is that Jesus begins to teach the disciples what it means when he says he is the Messiah. He begins to teach them that he must suffer and die. And this just doesn't make any sense to those disciples. Those disciples who had cast aside their fishing poles and given up everything to follow this Jesus. Those disciples who thought that Jesus was the Messiah that was going to come and conquer and reestablish Israel as the king, as the kingdom in charge. So this isn't computing, to use a phrase from the now of life. So Peter takes Jesus aside and rebukes him. Can you imagine? He says to Jesus something like this: Jesus, that talk about suffering and dying is not what we need to hear. That is crazy talk. Pull yourself together. You are the Messiah. Got it? No, start acting like the Messiah. Doesn't it seem odd that Peter would confess his faith in Jesus as the Messiah in one breath and then criticize Jesus in the next breath? Seems odd to me, but maybe not. Peter had been seeing Jesus heal people and work great miracles. He had heard teaching that was so profound that it had to come from God. I guess it's not so surprising that he would be having trouble coming to grips with the idea that the Messiah should suffer and die. I think that human beings are naturally Klingons, and that is all of the Star Trek language that I know. But think about it. We're born literally attached to another human being. We live this warm, spa-like existence in the womb, and then in an instant, we're exposed to the harsh world, and the only thing keeping us physically connected to our source of life and nourishment is cut off. Our whole life starts like a Monday morning, just plain harsh. So it is no wonder that letting go of those that we love is so difficult. Check out any airport during the week, and you will see tearful goodbyes as people are leaving each other. Students are heading off to the universities. Parents are wondering how their babies grew up so fast. Oh, excuse me. And everybody is hugging and crying. If we didn't care, we wouldn't cry. And Peter was being so real. He didn't want to let go to the source of his new life. He wanted to cling to Jesus for a little longer. But then Jesus takes it even further and tells his disciples in the crowd that if anyone wants to be a follower of his, that one would take up his or her cross and follow him. Sounds a little different promise than "I will make you fisher of people." That was major then. For us now, it's really lost its significance. After all, we wear beautiful gold crosses as jewelry, and we adorn our altars with bronze crosses. But in truth, to the people of Jesus' time, the cross was akin to the electric chair. It was brutal and barbaric. The cross was a tool of political power for the Romans. They maintained their power because the people were afraid of the death on the cross. So when one was condemned by the state, the condemned literally had to take up his cross and carry it to the public place where he was to be crucified. It was part of the humiliation process, the mechanism of social control for which crucifixion was invented. The cross was an instrument of suffering and of shame, and no more so than among the children of Israel, because not only did they have the shame of what was going on in the social context, scriptures themselves declare, "Cursed is anyone who hangs on a tree." So to die on the cross was a sign that one died cut off from God and cut off from the people of God, a sign that the person was rejected. And of course, in the case of Jesus, this was very true. The cross was the worst form of execution for the people of Israel and for the Roman Empire as a whole. Yet, Christianity, in contrast to many of the other religions of the day, will celebrate the search for beauty, truth, and good, and still has at its center this awful symbol of death and disgrace. Jesus is about keeping this barbaric symbol of death at the center of his gospel. He says once again, if anyone wants to be my disciple, let that one pick up his or her cross and follow me. This cross that Christ is talking about is not the proverbial cross we bear when we're talking about some chronic illness or hardship of loss. Now, Jesus is saying to his followers at that time and to us that they might literally need to go to the cross for their faith if they follow him, and we have a cross that we need to face also. The fact of the matter was that after Christ's death, there was a great persecution of those that believed in Jesus, and they had to pay the ultimate price for their faith. Paul himself took great pleasure in killing Christians before his conversion, and it was no small reality. And 11 of the 12 disciples are actually eventually put to death for their faith. And then Paul was also crucified in Rome. But what is Jesus saying to us when his words echo down to us? We've lost the cross, and we've lost, in the United States, we've lost the persecution. So surely we will not be put to death for our faith unless there's some changes that happen. But actually, you will. Maybe you won't be asked to forfeit your physical body for what you believe, but essentially Jesus is saying the same thing. You must pick up your cross. You must die. You must die to your own ways. Our religion is not an easy religion, and it is not a pretty religion. We nail ourselves onto the same cross that Jesus died on and allow God to recreate us from the inside out. You might remember a comedian named Yakov Smirnoff. Anybody? Yakov was from Russia. And when he first came to the United States, he was not prepared for the incredible variety of instant products available in American grocery stores. So in one of his comedy routine, he relays this feeling, and he's walking down the aisles of a grocery store, and he comes upon powdered milk. You just add water, and you get milk. And so he continues down shopping, and he comes up to powdered or instant orange juice. You just add water, and you get orange juice. And then he turned the corner, and he came up, and he saw baby powder. And he thought to himself, what a country. You just add water, and you get a baby? Of course, Smirnoff is joking, but we make these assumptions about Christian transformation, that people change instantly at salvation, that is easy and painless. All we have to do is add a little water. But Jesus says, no, it isn't that instant. You have to be willing to pick up your cross and die. You need to be willing to be transformed. Following Christ and transformation into the image of Christ is not some quick fix. We can't go to church as if we're going to the grocery store where we can find powdered Christianity. We can't just mix water and get instant disciples. There's no such powder, and disciples of Jesus Christ are not instantly born. They are slowly raised through many trials, sufferings, and temptation. And Jesus goes on to say to his followers, if they are embarrassed and if they deny him, when they have to stand up and be counted for, that Jesus would also deny them when he returned. I wonder how many of you have ever told anyone that you attend East Avenue United Methodist Church. I bet if I asked you to raise your hand, if you ever told anyone you were a member of this church, most of you would raise your hand. Yes, you have. Most all of my friends know that I come to church here, Pastor. But if I asked again, how many of you have ever shared that you were a disciple of Christ with a stranger or a friend? I wonder what the response would be then. I wonder, even among yourselves here in the church, are you able to tell your friends right here at this church, people that you've grown up with within these walls, that you are a true follower of Jesus Christ, a disciple willing to do whatever God is asking you to do to grow into the likeness of Christ? You see, when Jesus says to pick up our cross, to be willing to die, that we must not be afraid to acknowledge Jesus and our faith in Jesus and to not deny him. Because this denial is a denial of the whole means, the whole refusal. It's your self-centeredness that you do not want to feel ashamed about the gospel, or about being on fire for things of God, or for really being on board to the call to action that we talked about yesterday. Not to preserve the church, but to carry out the commission to go into all the world and make disciples. Shame or embarrassment is a self-centered feeling. Every time we hesitate to share the faith or who we are in Christ, because we will be thought of as foolish or a religious fanatic, we are thinking more about ourselves than about the good of others. Jesus is clear. If we are ashamed of him, he will be ashamed of us. Part of our denial of self is to put off feelings we may have about speaking about our faith, and to share the good news we believe in with others, even when we think that maybe they won't appreciate it. Now, I'm not saying that this means that we have to go about knocking on doors or standing on the corner or making a nuisance of ourselves, but it does mean that we must be a little less afraid to rock the boat, to be a little less afraid of standing out in a crowd, a little less afraid of being different if we truly believe that God alone makes the difference to human life, and that Jesus Christ is all that we believe he is. And this season of Lent and Easter tells of the true story of the Lord. Then how can we not share it? Jesus wants for us to take up our cross. He could have listened to Peter. He could have chosen a different path, but he didn't. He rebuked Peter. "Get behind me, Satan." He identified Peter with the same tempter he had wrestled with in the desert. He had denied himself the immediate glory of a coup d'etat, an overthrow of Rome, and did it God's way. He surrendered his own will in the garden, and now he asks us to surrender ours. Give up our own way and follow him. Buck up, take up your cross, and follow him.